Committee on Business and Labor, and we only have one piece of business today that is simple.
Will be done in 5 minutes.
Created a lot of interest, which is always good.
No.
I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2405.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2405 prohibits the regulation of rates, terms and conditions of service, or entering to the market of voice over internet protocol or internet protocol enabled services. Members, you have in front of you a -1 amendment that corrects a Scrivener's error, a -6 amendment, which will be discussed by one of the proponents later on today. And then you also have a hand engrossed amendment submitted by Verizon, which is their language that they'd like to see incorporated into the bill. And a summary of that information is on page 2 of your preliminary staff member summary.
And I have, normally I go back and forth, yes, no, for, against, opponents, proponents. I have a list of people here that are from all over the Northwest, and they're all proponents. So I'm just going to go down this list first, and the rest of the folks, the way I see it, and unless there is, I don't see any opponent that's more than, that lives a long way away. So I'm just going to start off with proponents and end up with opponents. And I hope I'm not hurting anyone's feelings with that, but it's just the way it's worked out here in this case. But then I'm going to go against what I just said and ask Representative David Edwards to come and open things up for us. Representative, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Cameron, and committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to open things up this morning. Because I am doing another committee, however, I'll just introduce the topic and then allow some of the other advocates to walk you through the bill and the proposed amendment. First of all, I caution you not to overthink this bill. This bill is very simple. It merely codifies current practice in Oregon. As you may know, voice over internet protocol is an emerging technology, and just like wireless was in its inception decades ago, it requires time and freedom in the marketplace from regulation to develop, and there's no need for state regulation at this time. It will provide the certainty necessary for broader deployment of broadband technology, so individuals and businesses that currently do not have the technology have that opportunity. It will provide our economy with much-needed job growth in the high-tech and communication sectors to create and develop the technology. And the advocates can point you to research that shows that the state could see an additional $1.4 billion of additional investment in Oregon based on the experience in other states with similar regulation. This type of investment will not cost the state $1. And that is truly the type of private sector investment Oregon needs during this economic downturn. This bill will show that Oregon is open for business, somewhat similar to what we accomplished in the 2007 session in regard to environmental policy. Once we set the RPS and established the business energy tax credits, we saw a tremendous investment in Oregon in alternative energy and other related technologies, and we expect to see similar results here. Various states have already recognized the importance of this type of policy that exempt new technologies such as voice over internet protocol and other IP-enabled services from regulation in order to remain competitive and attracting investment dollars. Oregon must enact similar policies. With our unemployment rate at over 9% and climbing, the urgency of this bill has never been greater. So I urge you to support House Bill 2405.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. And I'm grateful to hear about that investment in green energy. Being the only Democrat in Oregon that voted no on the RPS, I will tell people in the audience, don't use that as an argument for the bill. But I guess you and I are the only ones that can laugh about that. But thank you, Representative. And I've asked people to bring forth evidence of the need for this bill to us to get that investment in Oregon. If there's one thing I harp on in this building, it is investment in Oregon and family wage jobs in Oregon. So I really appreciate you being here today. I know you're very busy. Any questions of the good representative? All right. Thank you very
Mr.
much,
Chair,
sir.
Committee.
Thank you for all the work you've done on this, too. All right. I'm going to call David Valdez, Greg Romano, and Gene Ng. Please.
Good
Whenever you're ready, guys, whoever wants to go first.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the esteemed committee. My name is David Valdez. I serve as Senior Vice President for Verizon Northwest in the Rocky Mountain region. I am here to comment on House Bill 2405 and just provide some comments on that point. As was stated earlier, the purpose of this bill is to preserve the status quo. Preserving the status quo provides certainty. As an investor, we take a risk every time we spend a dollar on investment. We're willing to take that risk. However, what we don't want to take the risk of is of regulatory uncertainty. We believe that the consumer should decide who wins in the marketplace, and it is the consumer who decides who wins or loses in terms of products and services. That's what fosters innovation. Innovation occurs when you create products and services that consumers want. When you do that, then the consumer will say, this is a good product, this is not a bad product. We believe that that's the way that you stimulate innovation, and that's the way that you stimulate investment. When we talk about VoIP, as it was stated earlier, not to overthink it, it's basically email that talks because it rides on the internet. It is a software application in the same way as email and text messaging. It's an application that rides over a network. In Oregon, I am very proud to say that Verizon is at the forefront of technological innovation in that we have built fiber optic connections directly from the central office to consumers' homes. We have done this on a broad scale at a cost of hundreds of millions of dollars and created hundreds of living wage family jobs. We believe that this platform is going to create the platform for other companies to come in and create new innovative programs and services. Those services are largely, we believe, fostered by VoIP. So when we ask for certainty, we're saying, let's let the industry develop products and services. We've built the network. Let's see what happens. In the same way that you think of email, in the same way that you think of text messaging, think of VoIP as just another application. The other point I'd like to leave you with is that during these difficult economic times, we are not here asking for a handout. We are not here asking for any kind of grant. We're here saying we're willing to put the money in the ground, we're willing to take the risk, but we need your help. And the help that we need is certainty that when we make this investment, there isn't going to be any artificial barriers that aren't driven by the marketplace. And that risk is a risk we're not willing to take, and that's the risk that stifles innovation. It stifles investment because you're creating artificial barriers that stifle the application of VoIP to provide new products and services for our customers. The final point that I'd like to leave you with is that there are 13 other states that have already passed similar legislation. As the Senior Vice President for the region, my role is to go to the corporate table with my counterparts from other states. I compete for capital dollars. I compete with capital dollars with the state of California. I compete for capital dollars from the state of New York, Pennsylvania. And when we make our arguments to invest in our respective states, we point to a variety of factors. One of the things about Oregon that is very specific is that we have a very high early adopter rate. And by early adopter rate, I mean that people in Oregon really understand this technology. That is a plus for Oregon in terms of trying to compete with places like, let's say, New Jersey or Pennsylvania. The other factor is, what is the environment like? By you saying yes to this particular bill, you're saying that Oregon is ready for investment, Oregon is ready for technological innovation, and it makes Oregon more competitive with my counterparts, particularly those states who've already passed these similar bills. So in closing, I'd like to thank you for your time. I'd now like to introduce our General Counsel, Greg Romano from Verizon.
And Mr. Romano, before you get going, I should have asked this of you too. We talked about the consumer, and we're going to hear a lot about the consumer. And I'm glad we're talking about the consumer because that's what drives all this. People that are for this, I think I can speak for the committee, but we want to know what kind of protections are going to be still be in place. What's going to help? How is this really going to help the consumer? And what kind of protections are in place in this era of federal deregulation of the finance industry? People are really skittish. I can see myself supporting this bill, but I'm trying to help you so that the nice people out here that are very concerned about consumers, they want to hear what the industry is doing and what the statute's going to have to protect the consumer out there. So please, if anything comes into your mind, I would like to hear about that as well. The investment, great. The job's great. I'm all for that. So I just want to. So if you want to respond to that, that'd be great.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'll turn it over to Greg. But I do want to share just a quick anecdote. In the late 90s and early 2000 timeframe, I served as a political appointee in the Clinton administration at the U.S. Department of Commerce. And at that particular time, there was a great deal of discussion of what are we going to do about the Internet. And there was a lot of concern that if you didn't regulate the Internet, all of these terrible things were going to happen. President Clinton prevailed in terms of U.S. policy, and the policy was, let's not stifle this innovation. Let's not stop innovation in terms of how people use the Internet. It was the right approach. And during that debate, there were a lot of concerns that all of these terrible things are going to happen. Well, fast forwarding to 2009, I think we're in a very similar place. What we're asking for is, let's just maintain the status quo. In the same way that the Internet has fundamentally changed our life in terms of how we work and do business, VoIP is an application that could be very similar. So we're saying, let's not change the status quo. It's at its infancy. It's fostering investment, and consumers are going to have more dynamic products and services. And let me give you one example of that. When we think of the iPhone and all of the applications you could do, an email, you can do a text message, you can do a Google search, you can do navigate satellite location in terms of where you are. Had we put regulation on those applications, you would have never had that kind of innovative services. And what is happening now, the industry is running to try to create a competitor to the iPhone. We've created our own touchscreen cell phone, and that's what's happening, and that's how the consumer wins. So on that point, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Romano.
And once again, I hear the positive sides. I want to hear what the consumer will do if they're getting ripped off by some unsavory business person. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. My name is Greg Romano. I'm the General Counsel of Verizon Northwest. And let me take that point first, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the question. And one of the things we've done is we've proposed a series of amendments that you should have in front of you. They were sent down to Legislative Council's office last week, but they didn't come back in the right form. So what we're doing today is just working off the sheet that you should have in front of you. And one of those amendments makes clear that nothing in the bill alters any generally applicable state consumer protection laws.
Forgive me for interjecting. We haven't got the actual Legislative Council amendment yet. We have your copy of it, but we don't know that it's going to be verbatim. I just want so everyone knows what we're talking about here. Thank you.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. This is the piece you're talking about.
Yes, sir. That's correct. But that's not obviously, you know, it's not Legislative Council amendment. I just want to make sure everybody knows what we're talking about here.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll get into the amendments in more detail. But just up front, if you look, Section 3C just specifies that nothing in the bill affects the current state consumer protection laws that apply to all other services, and that includes prohibitions against unlawful business and trade practices. It would include any private rights of action that exist under the general statutes. And so I think it's real important that people focus on that particular amendment. Now, if I step back just briefly, let me provide some legal backdrop on the bill. The basic purpose of the bill is to preserve the legal status quo of no state regulation of VoIP or IP services. And by way of background, in 2004, the FCC expressly preempted state regulation of one of the two primary types of VoIP service known as nomadic VoIP or over-the-top VoIP, which is a VoIP service that can be provided over any particular broadband connection. It also indicated in the same order that it would preempt state regulation of the other primary type of VoIP service, which is fixed VoIP service, if it were presented with that specific issue. But it has never been presented with that specific case. And so as a result, 13 states and the District of Columbia have gone ahead and enacted legislation similar to HB 2405 to make clear that all VoIP services, including fixed VoIP services, are not subject to state regulation. They've done so to provide the certainty necessary to encourage investment in fixed VoIP services by making clear that no state regulation of such services will be attempted. And that's what HB 2405 would do in Oregon as well. Now let me turn to those amendments and just go through them one by one so that everybody understands that we're trying to address concerns raised by other stakeholders about potentially unintended consequences of the bill and trying to make clear that various things are not impacted by the bill. So if I just go through those one by one. First, in this new Section 3, 3A would clarify that nothing in the bill modifies any authority of a state agency or commission or any political subdivision of the state related to E911 service, as well as the fees collected for E911. Similarly, in that same section, we clarify that the bill does not modify any authority related to fees collected for hearing-impaired services, such as the telecommunications relay service fees, as well as fees collected for universal service purposes. And in the same section 3A, we also make clear that the bill does not modify any authority related to the charges assessed by carriers to each other for the exchange and delivery of inter-exchange traffic. That provision is particularly important because it means that the controversial issues associated with intercarrier compensation are not at issue or affected in any way by this particular bill, as they will be resolved by other means. In Section 3B, we offered language to make clear that nothing in the bill affects the interconnection rights or duties of a party under the Federal Communications Act. That ensures that unbundling and interconnection obligations of carriers like Verizon are not impacted by this particular bill. And we're working with competitive local exchange carriers, which are non-incumbents, on language for that particular section. We haven't reached agreement on specific language. And that's one of the things that I believe the Dash 6 amendment would attempt to address. We're not quite comfortable with that particular amendment, but we are in a continuing dialogue with these competitive carriers to try to work out language. But the bottom line is nothing in this bill would alter the obligations of an incumbent under the Federal Act to interconnect, to unbundle, to make its network available, and so forth. In Section 3C, and this is the point I mentioned earlier on consumer protection, nothing in the bill alters generally applicable consumer protection laws. In 3D, we offer language clarifying that the bill does not affect any ability of a state agency or local government to impose taxes on VoIP services. This bill is not intended to address taxes. In 3E, we offer language specifying that the bill does not modify any authority of the state or localities relating to cable franchising. And lastly, please keep in mind that the bill does nothing to alter a number of statutory requirements that apply to incumbents like Verizon. For example, the bill does not alter in any way what are known as the carrier of last resort obligations, as described in ORS 759.506. And also, I would add, we've been working very closely with the Department of Administrative Services on an amendment that's not yet in the draft you have before you, but we have reached agreement on language that we will get into the amendment, which makes clear that no authority of the Department of Administrative Services to provide services to state agencies and even private entities with public purposes will be impacted in any way by the bill. So that will be in the next version. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions either now or at the end.
You can go ahead first.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Gene Ng, and I'm Vice President, Legislative and Regulatory Affairs for Verizon here in Oregon. And I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today to talk about this bill. And I just wanted to add to what Mr. Romano had indicated about the amendments that we've offered. You know, we have reached out to stakeholders, and we are working with them to address their concerns, and we will continue, you know, to work with them through this process. And so having said that, and with that as background, you know, I'd like to just frame the presentations that, you know, that we'll be following. You're going to be hearing from representatives of the nation's largest and most well-known high-tech companies and telecommunications service providers. Several of these companies, such as Intel, who's a member of the Voice Over Net Coalition that you'll be hearing from, and Microsoft, have a significant presence in our state and our region. And these companies are the engines of innovation and job creation in our local economy. You're also going to be hearing from representatives of organized labor. You know, these are the men and women who build and maintain our state's broadband infrastructure. And what they have in common is that they support HB 2405. And the reason they support HB 2405 is because it creates the right policy framework to attract job-creating capital investment to Oregon. And with our state's unemployment rate at close to 10%, and with over 200,000 Oregonians looking for work, the urgency of adopting policies that will create and maintain family wage jobs has never been greater. And so I urge you to pass HB 2405, and that doing so will have no impact on the state's budget. And thank you. And I'd be open to addressing any questions that you may have.
Thank you. And at or around 9 o'clock, I'm going to try and get to the opponents. So for future panels, if it's already been said, don't say it again, because I want to make sure we get everybody a chance to talk today. Representative Barton, then Representative Kanemer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that we're pressed on time, so I will restrict myself from my usual litany of questions. So, Mr. Romano, just to clarify something, I believe, as I heard your testimony, that essentially what you are saying, because we're FCC's essentially preempted regulation of nomadic VoIP, that the only thing this bill, as amended, would do is clarify, in the face of sort of ambiguous dicta from the FCC, that the state of Oregon will not regulate fixed VoIP services. Is that a fair interpretation of this bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barton, thank you for the question. I think that's a fair characterization. The bill clearly applies to VoIP services and IP-enabled services, and there already is the express preemption on nomadic VoIP. So the effect of the bill then would be to just clarify, which we think is already the status quo, that there won't be any state regulation of those other types of VoIP services.
Please go ahead.
And actually, it's a second question, perhaps to Mr. Valdez or Mr. Eng. So, and I understand the need to, for certainty, to stimulate investment. However, it appears that Verizon has already invested several hundred million dollars into providing these services in the state of Oregon, despite the lack of total clarity of the status quo. I'm wondering then, I mean, based on that, why is this bill actually necessary? It seems that we believe that the FCC has already stated that it plans to preempt fixed VoIP regulation as well. You've already invested in it, despite the ambiguity. Why do we need to make this change? It seems that the investments, it seems that the primary determinants you're looking at when making investment decisions is not the total certainty of the regulatory structure at a state level so much as other decisions.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, thank you for the question. I think two things in response. The first is that we have invested and we want to continue investing. First point. The second point is that I am willing to bet that many people here are using their cell phones and are not using their landline phone in their home the way that they were 10, 15, 20 years ago. And the industry is rapidly changing, and how people use communication devices is rapidly changing. We are living in an intermodal communications period. We believe that we've provided the most compelling broadband connection out in the marketplace, and that if we bring the consumer that kind of service, other providers of software applications will develop applications that's going to ride on the network. We need the certainty in the marketplace that allows these program developers and these people who are developing these next generation of applications to know that they can develop, because we want that those applications to ride on the network. So what this bill does says, one, Verizon and other competitors continue investing in the state. Two, Let's make Oregon the state that creates the next Google. Let's make Oregon the next company that creates Yahoo or the next Microsoft. And the way you do that is creating an environment that's not only ripe for investment, but also ripe for innovation. And that's the certainty that this bill provides, and that's why it's important.
Representative Cameron.
Let it go.
Mr. Romano, I wanted to, you know, looking at the new Section 3 in E, it appears that that you've provided an exclusion that maintains local county franchise agreements. And I just wanted to verify that. What I don't see spoken to, and I previously was in local government, is regulation of right-of-ways. Counties don't mostly have that in the state, the cities do. And is that addressed as well? Or will it interfere with cable franchise or franchise regulation as it currently exists? And what about right-of-way regulation and fees?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kinnemer, thank you for the question. The bill is not intended to alter any locality ability to regulate the rights-of-way, and we don't currently have an amendment on that. But if something like that would make people more comfortable, that's something we could add. I mean,
it would be a requirement for me. I think we want to, if we're going to maintain the status quo, we ought to be upfront about what we're doing, and it's raised considerable question, and I think it's an economic one as well as a regulatory one. And you know, I don't see any problem with the status quo, but and I'm not eager to necessarily change it. Well, maybe I would be interested in some county stuff, but that's a different issue. I just think let's make it explicit then if that's what your intent is.
And Representative, just so I can jump on that, being a former city councilor of a very small town with a small general fund, we depend on that money, and hope the League of Oregon Cities isn't falling out of their chair, me up here defending them. But I couldn't agree more. I definitely don't want to put something in the statute that's going to allow anybody to use the right of way and not be mandated to pay those franchise fees.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm going to go to Whit Matthews Holy Esquivel. Representative Whit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With your permission, I may have a series of questions here.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Thank you. With your proposal to, in essence, take the state of Oregon out of the business of regulating fixed voice, I am given pause here to try and understand why it is that you would come here and propose that we would preclude ourselves as a state regulator from regulating you as a utility. And more specifically, as a regulated utility now, I have had a problem with your company and your billing procedures that took me the better part of 6 months to get cleared up. You have showed me no track record at all, zero, zip, none, as a company that has any responsibility to its customers, and in fact deserves more regulation than what your bill is proposing. Now, why would we as a state want to eliminate ourselves from regulating you?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Witt, thank you for the question. I think that the purpose of economic regulation is to address an imbalance in the marketplace, particularly when you have a monopoly or even a duopoly. There's dictates that say that you have to manage that to create a level playing field. What we're talking about is the edge of the communications network. This is the most ripe, the most innovative area in terms of how we communicate. In the same way that you don't regulate email, in the same way that you don't regulate text messaging, there shouldn't be any regulation on VoIP. The other point I'd like to make is that there are numerous other providers who are not regulated by the commission who are offering VoIP services as we speak. And let me give you one small anecdote of that. In December, I was visiting with my in-laws, and we attached a video camera to her computer, and she now has the ability to communicate with my daughter via VoIP. That's the kind of innovation that's in the marketplace. And the last point I will say, Mr. Witt, is that we strive to provide the best customer service that we can. We don't always get it right, but we strive. But the benefit of competition is that there's other benefits or other providers in the marketplace, and that's what we realize, and we're always working to improve.
With respect to competition, are there other internet providers, phone providers, anyone besides Verizon that is interested in this kind of bill and will be promoting this bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Witt, you will be hearing from other providers of these services that will follow. You'll be hearing from the Voice Over the Net Coalition, and they represent, as indicated before, a host of high technology companies that are capable of providing, voice alternatives to the services that we or other providers are will be offering. So I'd like to just leave you with that thought that, you know, there are going to be multiple providers out there because that's such a dynamic industry, there's not going to be just one single provider that people will turn to.
Well, and in terms of providers and the services that you provide, can we expect a full complement of services, high-speed internet, everything else, voiceover in Clatskanie, Oregon?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Witt, I think that as Mr. Valdez indicated earlier, you know, what we do when we assess the places that we want to continue deploying broadband, you know, there are a lot of factors that enter into that, and you know, one of the factors is, you know, are the services that we're going to be offering, you know, over that network, you know, are we going to be free to, you know, provide consumers what they want, or are we going to be regulated? And that really does enter into that equation, you know. And so I guess what I'd leave you with is that, you know, having the certainty certainly will be very, very beneficial to the business case, you know, as we're looking to deploy advanced technologies further out into our network.
With the potential that we would no longer be regulating your latest service, are you also still going to be pursuing subsidies from the Oregon Universal Service Fund?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Witt, the bill does not impact the State Universal Service Fund one way or the other, collection of fees or the way that fund is administered.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Chairman, just for the record, I agree with Representative Kenemer that absolute necessity that we need to get up front the fact that communities will have a right to regulate where these lines are put in their communities.
Thank you. And the franchise fees are really important, and I don't think that's a big hurdle here. And before I move on, I have Representatives Matthews, Hovey, and Esquivel, and then we're going to move on because we're running out of time. So Representative Matthews, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to say thanks for bringing forward amendments. I think that there are several of us that needed to hear those. We've heard a lot from our local districts, and I think the franchise fees definitely right away is a big concern, and customer service, as Representative Witt had mentioned, is a big concern as well, and a standard of customer service. You know, those were a few of the concerns, but again, I appreciate you working through the process, working with other telecommunication folks and stakeholders. I want to say, too, that I know I, for one, and I would believe anybody on this body doesn't want to see standing in the way of jobs in Oregon, especially with the current, unemployment rate. But I want to ask, and I think this panel is the appropriate to address, our neighbors of the north up there in Washington currently have this bill, and it, from what I'm understanding in research, it's not doing well. What are the concerns, the stumbling blocks? What are they going through, and why wouldn't they be moving on this if you're coming to Oregon and asking us to do it too? Let's not pretend that everybody's happy about considering this proposal. What are your problems in Washington, and what do you expect to do different here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Matthews, thank you for the question. A couple of comments. Number one, Oregon is several years ahead of Washington in terms of innovation, and let me give you two examples. The first example is that in 2006, the Oregon legislature put together a working group looking at telecom issues, doing a pretty comprehensive study. It was an inconclusive outcome, but the point is that the Oregon legislature has been looking at technology issues for quite some time. That study, that approach has never taken place in Washington. Point number two, when Verizon deployed its fiber optic network, it started in Oregon first. Oregon was the market where we brought the technology. Oregon is the market where the investment started. So from my perspective, Mr. Chairman and Representative Matthews, we think that Oregon is much more ripe than it is in Washington, and we believe that the benefits of our investment have come here first, and therefore we believe this is the place to push it.
All right. Thanks,
Mr. Chair. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gentlemen, I like Representative Barton, am perplexed for the need for this particular bill. It just seems to me that you're making a preemptive move to preclude the state from protecting consumers in the realm of rates and terms and conditions of voice over internet services. And you know, so I'm really troubled by how the PUC or the state's regulatory authority, looking at those aspects, is going to somehow wipe out the innovation in this industry. I'm just troubled by that because, as we've seen in the late history of the financial markets and the lack of regulation there, where we've had all sorts of new products come into the market, has caused more harm to our economy than anything in my lifetime. And so it's very difficult for me to make that step to say that even though it appears the federal government preempts us on some of this stuff, that we're going to make a statement that the state of Oregon will not regulate rates, terms, and conditions. Notwithstanding that, I appreciate your commitment to voluntarily provide some consumer protection pieces in there, but like the financial industry, who voluntarily tried to protect consumers as well, it just doesn't seem like having some regulatory oversight over that is a bad idea. So I'm having a little trouble getting to the need for this bill and why specifically precluding the state from trying to protect consumers in terms of terms and conditions and rates is going to be devastating to your industry.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holby, thank you for the question. I think that what we're talking about is preserving the status quo. That's number one. We're not trying to undo or redo anything. We are, this House Bill 2405 merely preserves the status quo. If you, for instance, think of companies who want to create applications, software applications that can innovate in terms of the VoIP space, it makes a difference whether or not that space is regulated. And if it's not regulated and you maintain the status quo, that is a tremendous incentive to create programs and applications, because the determining factor of whether they're going to win or lose are whether the consumer wants the product or not. Creating an artificial barrier is not only a disincentive, there's no public policy reason for creating regulations on an area that's extremely competitive, because the purpose of regulation is to try to level the playing field. The VoIP space is the most competitive, innovative space in communications today. We have no idea how this technology is going to evolve. And I bring you back, and this is my last comment, Mr. Chairman and Representative, to the iPhone. Had you put regulations in place, then nobody would have thought of putting together all of these numerous applications into this one little device. The reason that happened, it was in the absence of regulation. We are not trying to create something that's not already there. We're merely saying, this has been good, let's preserve it. It has no cost to the state. It brings dollars to the state. It promotes family living wage jobs. And from our perspective, and those people who are speaking in support of it, that's about as win-win as you can get.
We're going to have them up here again, Representative. Believe me, Mr. Eng and Mr. Green have their work cut out for them, obviously. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, came from a city background where I was on a city council, so I'm glad that we are preserving the right-of-way and the right-of-way fees because that's very imperative to our local communities. I use Skype. I get to talk to my brother-in-law and get to see my brother-in-law in Australia.
Pretty cool.
That's real cool.
That's if you like your brother.
I get to see my father-in-law in Montana. He's 91 years old, and I get to see what condition he's in.
Well, that is cool.
That's cool. So I think this is a very innovative system. I like it. It doesn't cost me anything. I just dial him up and talk to him. I get to see my grandkids. So I think it's very innovative, and I like it very much.
Oh, I'm glad we ended with you guys on a happy note there. Once again, you got your work cut out for you. And I know you got a good bunch of guys working on this, but I think there's some real concerns here that need to be addressed one-on-one, and that's what I ask you to do. With that, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And we'll be having another public hearing on the amendment, too, so that everybody has all their questions, answers, and concerns addressed, regardless of how they vote on it. So thank you very much. And once again, please, I don't want to go to a timer. I'd rather not go to a timer, but all you nice folks that are coming up here, if you can keep it within 2 or 3 minutes, it'd really help me out. So I'm going to hear from our good friends from IBW, Ray Engelhoff, forgive me, Ray, and Tim Nickel. So. What time is she going to go? Is she okay?
Thank you, Chairman.
Go ahead, Ray.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ray Engelhoff. I'm the business manager of IBW Local 89. Excuse me. I represent over 2,000 members that work in the telecommunications industry in Oregon and Washington. They work for employers such as Verizon, CenturyTel, Frontier, and a lot of contractors that will do that work out there under a union contract. I'm here mainly because this has increased my membership and created 157 jobs in Oregon alone so far. And if it keeps going the way it is, I see that this is going to be our future. I've been in this business for 30 years, and who would have ever thought we'd be talking about voice over IP back 25, 30 years ago when I was working on a cord board. So it's very amazing. It's the future of my members' livelihood. And that's, for me, is the most important issue that I can talk to you.
Thank you.
Try to keep it really short.
That's sweet.
Representative Witt, I think I know who can help you with that bill if you still have a problem with that. Be more than happy to.
All right. Tim, go ahead. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tim Nickel. I'm the business manager of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 280. I'm here today representing the Oregon State Association of Electrical Workers, and I just want to say through their authority that the entire weight of the over 10,000 IBW members in the state of Oregon is in support of this bill. Thank you.
Well, that speaks volumes to the chair. Any questions of these good gentlemen? All right. Thank you very much,
guys.
I appreciate it. Stacy Pies, Jim Gardner, and Jim Craven, please. And Stacy, I understand you got a plane to catch, so just go right ahead whenever you sit down.
I actually don't. I made a mistake. That was last week.
Oh, all right. Oh, go ahead first anyway.
Yeah.
I see these guys all the time. We can let them wait.
Thank you, Chairman Schaffler, Vice Chairs Barton and Cameron, members of the committee. My name is Stacy Pies. I am Director of Government and Regulatory Affairs for Skype. As Representative Esquivel mentioned, Skype is a software company that enables voice, video, and instant messaging all over the Internet using Internet protocol technology. And I'm also wearing a second hat here today. I serve as the Vice President for State Affairs for the Voice on the Net Coalition. The Vaughn Coalition makes up a group of companies that are all investing in and enabling IP technologies. We're talking about companies such as Intel, who has a large presence here in your state, Microsoft, Google, Yahoo, Skype, several VoIP providers, including COVAD, Earthlink, and others. So it is very much a high-tech company, very much a company or organization that company members are investing in and bringing these new services to consumers in the state of Oregon. And we're actually very excited about this bill. It may on its face seem to be have a minimal impact because the FCC has preempted regulation, but what we're finding is there are states all over the country who are starting to enact laws and regulations that actually do impact VoIP providers and are contrary to the federal preemption. So with all due respect to Mr. Romano, we actually believe it does more than just establish the status quo for fixed interconnected VoIP. What it does is it tells companies like Skype and Intel and Cisco and others that you can invest money in these products and bring these features to consumers. And these are the features that consumers want. And it's very exciting. And so what it does is it sends the green light to these companies to invest money, to innovate. These products mean that consumers will have greater choice, and greater choice pushes on the price and brings it down. During this difficult economic time, consumers are looking for lower prices, and there are studies out there that show consumers in Oregon will save significant money with the choice that VoIP brings. In addition, it is, as Verizon explained, a signal to companies to invest. And investment means job creation, and it also means a boost to the economy at a time that we really need it. And so I'm really encouraging you to think about the positive implications of this bill. I don't believe there are any negative implications. Consumers are protected. Consumers have the ability to go to the state AGs. They have the right of private action. They do have federal rights. And in addition, the incredibly competitive nature of the market means if you don't like the way you're being treated, if you don't like the way that your service is being offered to you, you switch. There aren't startup costs for consumers. There are no early termination fees. You just switch. And so what you want to do through this bill is to ensure that consumers have the ability to choose. They can decide that they want a service like Skype that offers free video calling, Skype to Skype services, or maybe they want a VoIP offering that enables conference calling. So if you're a small business owner, it really improves the cost for your small business to be able to set your employees up with free conference calling. And the features are really quite incredible. And we've seen all over the state the improvements in education and healthcare. There are teachers that are using a program called Skype in the Classroom, which is sort of the 2010 version of Pen Pals, where the teachers set up Skype video calling in the classroom. All they need is a broadband-enabled classroom, no cost to the teacher or to the school district. And the kids are making video calls to children in other states and other countries and getting to know them in a face-to-face, personal way, and it's very exciting. And there are healthcare providers who are using Skype video calling to be able to offer services to patients who perhaps didn't have the time or the money or the ability to come into the office. And so it's reducing their health care costs. And all of these innovations are incredibly important and have been recognized by, as Verizon says, 13 other states in the District of Columbia who said, we're not going to regulate VoIP. We're not going to regulate IP services. When my business people come to me and they say, can we roll out this product in Oregon? I have to tell them, right now there's no regulations, but there's also nothing that prevents the state from imposing regulations in violation of the FCC preemption. We've seen states, Missouri, for example, they passed an incredibly regulatory, very comprehensive piece of legislation that regulates the OIP and IP-enabled services, and consumers are not going to have the choice in that state. They will not have the ability to access these services because of that law. So I really encourage you to think about what this legislation means for consumers, what it means for small businesses, investments, job growth, and the economy in the state. Thank you very much.
And before I go to these nice guys, I would like to see some evidence of the stifling of innovation and the use of these products as a result of that regulation. If you could get that for us, I'd really like to see that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will see what's out there.
Right.
Generally, what happens is that companies just don't bring, companies like mine, Skype, and other VOIP companies just don't bring the offerings to the states, so there's not generally hard evidence.
Well, whatever you
but
have,
I'd be happy to
see.
Look for that for
if
you.
If you could just do a comparison of Missouri and all these other states that have passed this bill would probably be adequate.
Absolutely.
Mr. Thank Chair.
I want to go to the next two guys and then Representative your first one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Jim Craven representing Tech America. Tech America is the new organization resulting from the merger of AEA, who's worked in this building for 25 years, and a group called the ITAA. So from henceforth, I will be Tech America when I come before you on behalf of the technology industry. We're the nation's largest technology trade association with over 1,500 member companies, and we're here today to urge passage of House Bill 2405 with the appropriate amendments. I think there's a lot of, as you can tell, active conversation going on to make to raise the comfort level on this bill, and I encourage all the parties to continue to have that conversation. Our members include members of the Vaughn Coalition that Stacy represents, Intel, Google, Yahoo, the people that basically build the internet and provide both the hardware and software tools that make the internet happen. And one of our major themes here in all the states in Congress and around the world is innovation and competition. So we're pro that. We're proud to support Verizon's efforts. Verizon's also a member of Tech America. So we're kind of the big tent that includes the folks who are actively supporting this bill, and we urge its passage. Thank you.
Jim Gardner, representing Microsoft, for the reasons previously stated, we support the bill.
Thank you, Jim. Representative Barton.
I just wanted to clarify to this committee that to the extent the federal government has preempted the field, that the state, Missouri, or otherwise cannot then implement enforceable regulations. That is, it would be illegal. Skype or any other company would have recourse. I hope that's not a problem.
May I respond?
Please.
Chairman and Representative Barton. The problem is that companies like Skype and a lot of the other VOIP companies that are out there are really small companies. And the resources to sue the state, to take them to court, to show that the statute is unlawful, far exceeds the ability of the company to do so. So it's easier to say, that's fine, then we just won't invest in Missouri. You know, to have the statute overturned is a very expensive proposition.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment. I resent the inference that from large utilities that if we would presume to regulate them, that they would not come to our state. And as folks who determine our state's public policy for the good citizens of the state, many of whom are their very same customer base, I'm on the borderline of taking offense to that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Duly noted, Representative. Thank you very much. Any further questions of this panel? All right, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Let me see. I think we're going to move to the other side of the dial here. And is that all right? Any more pros? I think everybody else is either against or neutral. I'm sorry, what? Oh, yes, of course. Chairman Byer, please. Thank you for your patience, sir.
Always patient, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
It's good to have you here before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, I'm Lee Beyer. I'm the chairman of the Oregon Public Utility Commission. And I guess to start off with saying I'm opposed to this bill. But I couldn't help thinking, you know, as I've listened to the testimony this morning, particularly Mr. Cravens, and I congratulate him on their new coalition. I was wondering if a few years ago if there was a tech finance working in Congress. Anyway, and I do want to start off, as we talk about Verizon's deregulation bill, congratulating them very sincerely on their build-out of the Fios system in Washington County, or at least Beaverton, Hillsborough, portions of Washington County and Gresham. It is a wonderful system. I hope they're successful in getting more than a minimum number of their customers to convert to that. I wish I could get the same service from Verizon in the rural areas of the state. We've had a little problem on that. But they're working on it, and they're a good partner. And also, you should be aware that there are a number of others who are doing the same thing. This should be complicated. Comcast has done a wonderful job in migrating voice services onto their cable system, as has Charter in many parts of the state, and Ben Broadband. And certainly, we wouldn't want to leave out people like Clearwire, who are trying to do the same thing wirelessly, as well as many of the cellular companies that are offering broadband internet-connected services over their system. So this is something that's happening. It's there. It's going to emerge. There is not an impediment to investment in the state. At least you couldn't demonstrate that because there's been so darn much of it. So it's going to happen, and there are a lot of reasons why it's got to happen. It's because the digital technology, frankly, is a better technology than the legacy analog system, and that's why almost all of your telephone systems, and if we're talking about telephone, are only analog from the house to the nearest office or the nearest tower, and from there they're all digital. They're all running on one form or another of internet protocol services. So that's kind of the nature of the telephone system you have in place. So you need to understand that. The other thing that I want to be clear of, and Representative Barton was very clear on this, is that we are not currently in Oregon regulating VoIP services for the simple reason of we can't. You can't currently, as a legislature, do that. Congress has preempted you. There's some unclarity nationally over the definitions of that, and it's just because it's an evolving technology and you're going to get there. But you couldn't if you wanted to. And in fact, if we tried to get into a business that Congress gave you, we would have to come to you and ask for permission to do that. Now, I want to be honest with you and say what we do try to do, and I'll be very clear if this is with cable TV or anything else. If one of your constituents calls our office and has a problem, even though we may not have complete authority, we try to work with the companies to deal with that. And they are very good, for the most part, at working this for the simple reason they don't want to create a negative field where you might get into the business of saying it's time to protect our customers. And it's that threat of the fact that the legislature may do something in the future that keeps them honest. That and a desire, and I want to be clear, and a desire to try to serve their customers so they don't go someplace else. That's it. So you've got it there. I've got, in my written testimony, I've got a lot of technical stuff. You don't want to hear that. It's all over the place. This is really one of protecting customers and making sure it happens. I've spent most of my career before the governor appointed the PUC trying to create jobs in this state, and I would want to do nothing that stopped that. I don't think we're talking about anything here that would stop that now. You don't need to act. We can't act on your behalf or without any action, and Congress isn't going to go there. You really don't need this law. I'm reminded in my 10 years on your side of the bench, the one rule that I tried to live by was don't pass a law that's not necessary. And I suggest to you today that there's no need for this law. There's no need for this law. There's nothing in it that does it. There is a little confusion, I think, on consumer protection. One of the issues that's there, you heard the counsel from Verizon talk about we're going to preserve all the state laws. Now, the state law he was talking about is the Unfair Trade Practices Act, which is a good act. But you need to understand what that law says. That law says is that the state, the Attorney General, will protect against any company or business in Oregon from creating a practice of unfair trade practices. That means you have to have a whole practice, and the thing is they go and get a cease and desist order, and actually it's called a voluntary employment agreement. They do not have the authority under the laws of this state to act on behalf of an individual customer. They can't do that. That's one of the reasons in terms of their cellular activity why they have entered into an agreement with the PUC to work for them. We are their agent working with cellular customers, and it's been a very good relationship. And the difference, I like the contrast, is they're trying to root out bad companies, and I'm not trying to impugn anybody here. What I'm concerned about through our staff is protecting Aunt Millie. If Aunt Millie's phone isn't working, if she's getting bills or fees on her bill that she doesn't think are fair, we go out there and work with the companies to get Aunt Millie's problem taken care of today. We just did one for one of your colleagues, Representative Maurer, down in Southern Oregon, who had a problem, had a constituent with a problem in the southern part of the state. We went there, and the company, after we looked into it, after he had been battling with them for a long time, we talked to them. They said, well, he's right. We didn't do it right. We don't know why it didn't work this way. And our response to them was, well, fine, you go figure out why it didn't work, but rebate the money today. That's what we do. We represent your constituents, and that's the only thing we do. We don't try to get in the way of companies. And in fact, I would tell you, we had a debate last session about deregulation in general over ILEX. What we have done since then is we sat down with, it was Quest. Quest came to us, and I made a promise to them that we would work with them. We recognized their business situation, and we sat down and said, what do you need? And they said, we have problems competing where there's lots of what's called packages or bundles in the service where they want to sell you telephone service and various, you know, caller ID and all these things bundled with television services, bundled with broadband services, and we'll sell a package like that. In the public interest in that, what I said to them is what I want to protect is Aunt Millie's right to have a single line service at a reasonable fee. And if you want to sell the bundles, we don't care about that. That's a business transaction. There's a lot of competition. You go out and do that. We gave them that right in their tariff. They can do that now. The only question we said, or the only comment I made to them, is if you come back, if you sell a service, a bundle, I'm damn well going to hold you accountable to that you deliver what you promised in that contract at the rates you promised, at the quality you promised. And I think that's why we're here, is to make sure that people get the service they want. And in enacting that order for Quest, we made exactly the same offer to the other four rate-regulated companies, Verizon, Embark, CenturyTel. We told them all, come on in, we won't do a rate test, same deal, get it done, not a lot of problem. I think that's the evolving way to do it. Now, I do want to suggest to you that first let me start and say, remember, you heard a lot of things about all the special services and things that you can do. We're talking here about just a telephone call. The other portions of those services, if it's looking up, you know, on Google, the nearest restaurant, that is not regulated. You cannot touch that today. You can't touch it. It's precluded by federal law. We're only talking about the telephone call. Representative Esquivel's comment about talking to his brother or brother-in-law in Australia over Skype. It's great service. I use a free one to talk with my son in L.A. over America Online. The thing you have to keep in mind is that that's those services, the Skypes and the Vonages, the pure VOIPs, they're a software service that you have to have. You have to be paying somebody for a broadband connection to use. It's not a traditional telephone service. It's just a replacement. It's a software service. So you can't regulate that now. The problem, the issues that you have to keep in mind is the intricacies. What we spend a lot of our time doing at the commission is putting on the black and white shirt and refereeing among telephone companies. Because when you, in the old days when you just had Ma Bell, it was easy. You just had one place to go. Now you have many people out there trying to sell telephone services, and what you want as customers and what your constituents want is they want to, whoever they buy that from, they want to know that they can make the call and it's going to go through. And that's called, you integrate and interconnect the systems. We referee that. Now, I heard some comments here this morning about level playing field, and most of the people who work with us sort of grind their teeth when they hear that, because I have often repeated a saying is, I understand completely, since I've been at the commission and in my 10 years on the thread, what a level playing field is to a company. That's a level playing field that's tilted like that. Everybody wants the level playing field that gives them the advantage, and that's what everybody is seeking. It makes sense. You know, I would do the same thing, trying to get my place where I have the best leg up to everybody else. But the intricacies of that system, no one is going to argue in this room that in the industry is going to argue that you don't want the interconnections, because they fight over it every day in front of us, and they amaze me sometimes that they would. You would like to say, you know, can't you guys get along? You know you have to connect. There's also a series of fees that go to make the system work called access fees. You heard some amendments saying they're going to do that. There's the issues of right-of-way fees and other things. The bill that hasn't presented in front of you, you know, it's only a little bit, it's not very long. I think the amendments, when you get done, you're going to have something that looks like a 20-page bill because of the, oh, we didn't mean that, oh, we didn't mean that, oh, we didn't mean that, oh, no, we'll take care of that here. You know, if you don't do anything, you don't have to take care of any of that. You just leave it alone, and they can continue to do what they want. All the systems will be in place to deal with that. It is interesting, though, when you read some of this, and it's part of the confusion of the industry. When you look at the definition, it's because an internet protocol-enabled service is a service that's provided using internet protocol. There's no definition of internet protocol, because there isn't one. There are lots of different things out there. And then you have things that says, are any emerging system that might happen in the future? I mean, part of that is like saying to you, we want you to give us a get-out-of-jail card for anything we might consider doing in the future that we haven't thought of yet. I don't think that's the kind of thing you should be doing. I don't think that's in the best interest of your constituents. I will tell you today that the PUC has no intention of going and regulating these people other than trying to help the customers out when they have a call. I think if you try to get in the middle of this now, you're going to cause problems. The FCC and Congress are having problems trying to figure this out on their own. I think one of the reasons they're here now, I mean, a couple of years ago, you wouldn't have seen them here because you had a different administration in place. Now they're fearful that you have a change in administration, and they better get in the game and try and win at the state level, because they don't think they're winning at the federal level. So, Mr. Chairman, I've rambled on long enough. I've given you some technical things. There are some states that have done this. There are more states that have seen this. Verizon has introduced the same bill in every state they serve in, I believe. Washington State's the closest one that last year the legislature up there said, idea, we think we'll wait a couple of years. We'll study this and see what happens and see what Congress does. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry for rambling on. I obviously have some issues here. I know who I work for. I work for the consumers, and that's what I'm here to try to protect.
Thank you.
Be happy to answer any questions.
And believe me, we always welcome your testimony and listen carefully to you, regardless of how anybody feels. And on that dereg bill, a couple of brilliant committee chairs took that relating clause and made it more difficult for obnoxious robocalls to come into people's homes at dinner time. And I'll share the names of those wonderful gentlemen if anyone cares to know.
So, that, Mr. Chair, I would assume that you believe that some regulation is appropriate.
Yes, I do. And if you have any, you've heard all the questions here, and if you have any. If the commission has any evidence of what we've heard about here today as far as the benefits or the disadvantages of regulating or not regulating, of people investing or not investing due to this kind of regulation or lack thereof, I'd be interested in seeing that too.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think the evidence of the effect on investment is quite clear. The Verizon has talked about it. You could hear from Comcast. They have literally put millions of dollars into Oregon's economy already, where they think they can get a return on those services. And they've invested first in the areas where there is affluence, where people are most likely to be willing to pay for that service. I guess one fear I have for their service, and it could be others, but for theirs, is they are what we call the carrier of last resort.
And what that means is if they, if the customer can't get it from any place else, under state policy is that carrier has to provide it. That goes away if they turn to a complete fiber optic system. Other concerns you're hearing from the competitive providers is under federal law, currently where there's a copper loop, we call it a copper loop, it's the wires that go from the office to the residence, those services, they have to sell that at a wholesale rate to a competitive provider so that they can compete, because you don't want a lot of wires going there. Once they put fiber in the ground, which they have done, if they go to a pure fiber system, they no longer have to sell that service to a competitor. They may, but they don't have to. You know, they could lock the competitors out. Other things is right now you have a system in the Beaverton, Hillsboro, Gresham area and parts thereof where you have parallel systems. They have done a wonderful job of putting the system out. Currently, they've got a little less than, I think, 25% of their customers have chosen to pay the higher freight to go to a fiber to go to the Fios system, which has a lot of things besides just voice. If for economy's sake they decide to switch everybody from copper, just disable their copper and go to a fiber system, they no longer would have carrier of last resort provisions there. And in fact, customers wouldn't have any choice because that's the only phone system that's out there except for wireless. So, there are little technical things around there.
Well, and on that, and then we're going to go, I'm going to go to Representative Kammerer and Mr. Representative Barton. Currently, this is, and so I just understand what's going on, and I show my ignorance in this committee all the time. Maybe that's not the politically astute thing to do, but currently this is not regulated. So you do not regulate it, yet the consumer does have action at the Attorney General's office. First of all, how many complaints, but you probably get complaints about all kinds of things that you don't regulate at your office. Do you have any data, and if you don't have to provide it today, of how many complaints about this kind of technology today your office receives, and then how many of them actually turn into something that is actionable by the Attorney General? If you have that, I'd be interested. And then my question, too, is if currently you don't regulate it now, and I do have some, when I read that, and any successor, that does definitely leap out of the page at me because I don't want to give anybody a jail get out of jail card. But if we aren't regulating it now and we don't intend to regulate it in the future, then what is the argument against memorializing, not regulating it now or in the future in the statute? Well, I'm struggling with that one.
I'm sorry, I missed that last.
If we're not regulating it now and you don't intend to regulate it in the future, although you want to keep your options open, the argument is as long as those options, you don't get the investment. We're not regulating it now, and I haven't heard anything that you've just said showing me that we're going to regulate it, that you as a commission are going to regulate it, and that, or we as a state are going to regulate it in the future. What's wrong with memorializing it in the statute saying it's in statute now, we're not going to regulate it?
Okay. Mr. Chair, that's a good question. That's a good point. I would suggest that we're not doing it now, and the numbers of volume, I'll get you the statistics of what we have. There's a very small number of users using this service now, so I suspect you won't see a lot of numbers there just because there aren't that many users. I think the biggest reason not to do it is what I said previously in terms of the silver hammer. If the threat that it may happen in the future is there, you get more responsiveness, frankly. A lot of work we do with some of the cellulars and others is the fact that they don't want to create a situation where the legislature may do it. If that uncertainty is there, you still have a certain amount of moral suasion, if you will.
All right. Representative Kennemer, then Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nice to have you here. I guess, as I'm listening to you, I don't disagree that this bill is perhaps not needed. I guess the thing that I think is profoundly compelling is the discussion by both Verizon and Site that what this bill does is add certainty. And I guess, to me, that's pretty compelling because I like to invest, and I know a lot of other people that do. And the sure deal is always a lot better than, well, maybe it depends. Sometimes if you go out there and just risk your money, and I'm kind of surprised that Verizon went out and risked as much money as they did. But if we could add some certainty to the marketplace, it seems to me that we would dramatically increase the investment in Oregon, and I guess that's the question. If there's a question there, that's sort of the question, you know?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ketterman, I hear the argument, but I think the fact is that they've invested pretty much all they're going to invest in Oregon. They'll do more.
Sure. Verizon has.
But they put it in the areas where they, as good business people, where they see a return because it is a premium product, and you're not going to roll it out where you don't think the people have the money to buy the premium product. With regard to Skype and Vonage and all of those, you can go on the web today and buy that anywhere in the world. It is not going to change the sales pattern. For good, they're there. If you've got an internet hookup, you can buy Skype, you can buy Vonage, there are a number of others that you can buy today. You are not, by taking action in this, you are not going to change that. The investment, and by the way, theirs is not an investment in infrastructure. Those services, and they're very good services, they ride on other people's infrastructure. That's a software program that's just you using somebody else's stuff, like you do for a lot of other things in the internet. You still got to have an internet connection. Somewhere along the line, you got to pay for the internet connection.
Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to ask a question of Chairman Beyer. However, before I do so, Mr. Chair, asked a question of Chairman Beyer that I'd like an opportunity to try and answer, if I may. You essentially asked him, and it's a very good question, that to the extent, if you believe, and I do believe, that this bill would essentially codify the status quo, what is the downside? Why should we not do that? And I see two reasons for doing so. Number one is every time we pass a bill in this body, there is a risk of unintended consequences.
Amen.
And that risk is sometimes more salient with certain bills than with others. And I think this is one of those bills in which it really is an acute risk, because this isn't just a VoIP bill. This is all IP-enabled services over broadband, including technologies that have not been invented yet. For example, potentially certain cable services. There are a lot of things we could be doing with this bill that we do not intend to do. And although the proponents of the bill make very powerful arguments in essentially why deregulation is a bad thing, in this context, that it might quell innovation or investment, and that is a very good argument if we are threatening to draw the gun of regulation. However, that's not what this bill does. This bill is essentially making us disarm unilaterally before it's even discussed. So anyway, that is argument number one, the risk of unintended consequences, which I think is particularly acute in this case. Number two would be sort of just a general argument in favor of statutory parsimony, that to the extent this bill just preserves the status quo, why should we do it? We're not actually changing anything. We shouldn't necessarily just change the law because somebody's asked us to nicely, so much as we should only do so when there's a compelling need to do so. So anyway, that would be my attempt to answer your question, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
And with that said, I'd like to still, if I may, ask a question of Chairman Beyer.
Let's tighten it up, Representative.
Sorry. Mr. Beyer, let's assume for purposes of this question that the state of Oregon does have the authority to regulate VoIP. That is an assumption which I think is, if not, I'm skeptical of, but I admit it's ambiguous. Let's assume that we do so. Does the PUC have the authority currently under its enabling statutes to regulate it? Or let's pretend you wanted to, what I'm asking, if you wanted to regulate this and the state of Oregon had the authority to do so, could you do so right now via rule or other process, or would you have to come back to this legislature and have us delegate that regulatory authority to you?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barton, it's always dangerous for a non-lawyer to answer questions of a lawyer. I believe, based on my discussions with our counsel, that we would have to come back to the legislature to gain authority to do that. And if I might, Mr. Chair, and just Representative Barton, you really hit home with your comments, your previous comments, and I was thinking back to my time in the legislature, and one of the bills that I worked on and was most proudest of was something called House Bill 1149. I was one of the lead carriers on that, which deregulated in Oregon the electric industry, partially. We didn't make the mistake of California.
you know, that cost Oregon taxpayers literally millions of dollars, and I've been living with that for 8 years. I've called it my time in purgatory. Unintended consequences are there. Be careful in what you do.
I couldn't agree more, and I think we're going to see the results of the renewable portfolio standard eventually drive up the cost of energy in this state artificially, unilaterally, and unnecessarily, and all those jobs that my good friend, and I'm leaning yes on this bill, but our good friend, the representative earlier, talked about, you know, those jobs were in the pipeline long before we passed that bill. I don't think we needed to pass it, and we passed it anyway. So I still feel strongly both ways on this philosophical argument. So I'll just shut up. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Proponents,
we're going to move on.
Proponents of this bill, I think, have been arguing that it is of business necessity to move this bill. And I just want to suggest that one of the biggest things they could do for business in my district is to bring us high-speed Internet. My dial-up is so bad, I'd invite the proponents, this committee, anybody in the audience, to my house. Watch me cook dinner while I'm waiting for my dial-up to come up. In fact, Mr. Chairman, in terms of this committee's understanding, I got a three beer dial-up. That's how long it takes.
Well, that's great testimony there.
So if we come for the beer, do we have to eat the food?
All right. I'm going to clear the chambers. Mr. Chairman.
We don't have a direct role authority to do that. We have been promoting, kind of trying to cajole the companies to do that. One of the marvelous things that happened with the stimulus, federal stimulus bill that passed, is Congress is making available considerable amount of money. I mean, it could be as much as $60-70 million to expand broadband services to unserved areas in Oregon. We're working with the governor's office and with the national administration to do that. Interestingly, one of the comments that was made most recently by senior executive VP of Verizon is he thinks that money ought to go to the state and they ought to coordinate it to the PUC. So.
Thank you, Chairman. The point I was trying to make: you can't do business without high-speed internet, and much of my district's locked out of business opportunities because of it.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
No, thank you very much. One last question, Representative.
I've been awful quiet today.
Yes, you have,
Mr. Beyer. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me. You made some comments about which perked my ears. There's a point where people will be without phone service. You said the copper wire. You talked about copper wires being next to the cables, and that at some point in time they make the switch, and consumers would be without phone service. That's what I heard you say,
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron. Let me be very clear about that. Verizon has done a good job in the service territory of rewiring their plant, if you will. They have not disconnected the copper system. It is still in place. They have said nothing about disconnecting that. They have put a parallel fiber system in place that runs by every one of their customers' homes in there, and it's connected at the customer's option now. I believe at some point they hope that system will be totally fiber. There are a lot of reasons you would want to do that in terms of this is a superior system, costs less to operate it, and all that. I think the dilemma they face is trying to convince their customers to go. If at some point they chose to switch them all, I mean, at some point you have to make the decision to make a switch. If they were to do that, to go completely to fiber, under federal law, alternative providers do not have access to that. They don't have a right to access that they have under the copper system. They might be able to negotiate a contract, but they don't have a right to that. That's predominantly, we're talking about business customers that use competitive providers now, not residential. At the time they did that, if it was fiber and this law were to pass, if they made that switch, there is no, currently no carrier of last resort. We would not, as the PUC, would not have the authority to tell them they have to serve the customer. I heard him say they have some amendments that might deal with that, but under the amendment, or under the bill as it stands now, that would disappear. We would, because they're a fiber provider, we would have no authority over it.
Okay. And then the last thing, really quickly, to help Representative Witt and our chair, the beer consumption in my house went from three beers to a satellite, which is an option, okay? And I kept calling the phone company, and finally we do have a DSL, but no broadband yet at this point in time. So there are other options out there.
You got a DSL? What? That's a phone service, right?
We're talking about internet service.
Yeah, DSL's a telephone.
Representative Cameron, I'd like to save the difference for beer money, though.
Mr. Chairman, will you make yourself available when we have a public hearing on the amended version, or someone from your office, but preferably you, because we have some more questions of you, but I have to get going, because I want to get people out here. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate it. All right, I'm going right in order, and folks, I'm asking you, I'm going to stay here, if necessary, right up until floor session. I'm not asking this committee to do that. I want to get everybody we can in today that we possibly can. And if you've already, it's already been said, I beg you don't say it, even though I'm repeating what I just said. Brant Wolf, Jeffrey Smith, and Fred Crist. And I'm just going right down the line here, folks. So. Brant, just go right ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brant Wolf. I represent the Oregon Telecommunications Association. We represent 30 rural independent telephone companies in the state of Oregon. Our association represents all the telephone companies in the state, with the exception of Quest and Verizon. This bill, we have just a couple of issues with this bill that we're working with Verizon to get some amendments to fix. The two issues are access charges, as you've heard about, and then some of the other public service programs that you've also heard about. Basically, with access charges, I don't want to cover any territory we've already covered, but it's as surely as Verizon needs certainty for their continued investment in the state of Oregon, the rural companies that serve Oregonians in places like Duper and Mount Vernon and places like that need certainty as well. Access charges provide that certainty. Some members of our association believe the bill, as drafted, would take that certainty away. The amendments we're working on would add that certainty back in. I think we're very, very close to the amendment language. There's a couple of tweaks we need to make, but if we can get to that, then we will no longer oppose the bill. We'll move to a neutral position. In the interest of time, I'll just stop there. I'll answer any questions if you have any questions. Jeffrey Smith here is with me today, works for GB&W Consulting, does lots of work for rural independent telephone companies. If you have any questions about who pays, why they pay, how they pay, things like that, I would urge you to direct those to Mr. Smith. That's the end of my comments.
Go ahead and answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Just to echo some of what Brant Wolf has said, our concerns
You have to identify yourself, please.
My name is Jeffrey Smith. I'm the VP for the Western Region for GVNW, as well as Chairman of the Board. Our concerns focus primarily on that access area, as Brant mentioned. The access charges do provide the funding for these carriers for the investments that they've made. Mr. Valdez talked about needing certainty. We believe certainty is important for all carriers, in addition to Verizon, all the carriers that serve the various portions of Oregon. I like to use an analogy of a little different than telecom with this. There's a lot of confusion right now as to what will or will not happen. There's a lot of discussion that's going to happen at the federal level. I like to use a grocery store analogy, and everybody understands when you go into a grocery store, you have to pay if you take some of the merchandise. We don't propose to set up rules that if a person has a yellow tie or a pink shirt on, they don't have to pay. And that's without these amendments, that would be what could be one of the unintended consequences that PUC Chairman Beyer talked about. And that might help Representative Witt with his three beer allowance on the dial-up, but it would be patently unreasonable. So in the interest of time, I'll restrict my comments to that, but we are very much of the opinion it's important to have certainty and to deal with the needs of all Oregonians. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, committee, it's good to be here. Appreciate the opportunity to comment on this bill. My name is Fred Crist. I'm the Policy and Regulatory Affairs Manager for MAC. We are a local government agency that represents 14 jurisdictions in Washington County, including Lake Oswego, Hillsborough, Beaverton, all the way out to Gaston. We concentrate our energies on regulating cable television. And because the committee seems to have a pretty good handle of the other issues in this bill that could cause problems, I just want to focus my comments on a couple of those. You have my testimony for the other issues, and other people are here that can discuss the global issues. Our problem is with this bill is Section 1A. That is the section that defines IP-enabled services. Nobody really knows what that means, but I can tell you how it might affect cable television regulation in our area and some of the other areas. It would, as we all know, I think, all services at some point will be delivered over IP, whether it's phone or cable. You know, it's all coming within the next 2 to 20 years. If Verizon or Comcast, who we both manage franchises for, we regulate both those companies. If they switch over to an IP-based cable television delivery system, this bill as written would put local cable television regulation out of business, including the franchise fees that you discussed earlier, including consumer protection on a local level. And just one sort of issue that made an impact on me. Verizon right now delivers some of its services over IP and some over traditional cable television technology. Video on demand comes to your house if you have Fios on an IP, in an IP format. This bill passes in the form it's in. Verizon would probably may have a case at some point to say, we're now going to exclude those services from the definition of franchise fees, and we'll be cutting your franchise fees by that amount. That's a problem for us, obviously, and for local government in general. And my last point is just to draw your attention to the argument that the proponents make about other states. I think Representative Matthews drew the attention to Washington. Some of the other states we've looked into, there may be 13 states that have something on the books regarding VoIP, but only two that I found have a section like Section 1A in it, where the IP-enabled services are defined and excluded in their entirety, no matter what they may be. So with that, I'll close and take your comments.
And I hope they're listening carefully, and I hope they answer the question. And I want to hear more about that, how this relates to those other states, our language relative to theirs. So I see them nodding their heads. Yes? And your point's well taken about the franchise fees. And it goes right into the unintended consequences, and we don't want to do that. Believe me, I want local governments to be able to have good union contracts with their workers and be able to pay them those wages and benefits. So with that, are there any questions of these good people? All right, thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate it. And thank you for working with them, Brad. I just continue to do that. Andrea Fogue, Nancy Werner, and Brenda Wilson, please.
To go first.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Andrea Fogue with the League of Oregon Cities. The League of Cities opposes House Bill 2405, both in its current form and the amendments as hand-engrossed by Verizon do not address those concerns. I appreciate today your sensitivity and to our franchise fees, rights-of-way authority. Taxing authorities also has implications with this bill, as well as the broadness of the IP-enabled services and consumer protections. With me today is Nancy Werner with the law firm of Beery, Elsner & Hammond, and she's going to elaborate a little bit and respond to some of the comments and some of those issues that I just outlined.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. Thank you very much for the opportunity to address you this morning. Again, my name is Nancy Werner. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Beery, Elsner & Hammond, which is a firm that represents exclusively local government, and I specialize in telecommunications law at the firm. I want to stress that this is not a simple bill that maintains the status quo. We've heard several comments to that effect, and as many members of the committee and the chair have noticed, this would have a devastating impact on local right-of-way authority franchising and franchise fees. And I don't want to dwell on that. We've addressed it, and it's in my written testimony as well. But I want to make it clear that the amendments, the Verizon amendments that have been discussed today, do not address these concerns. There is nothing in the amendments that preserves the existing authority of local government to require franchises for use of the right-of-way. And the only thing that addresses franchise fees is a comment, a section that talks about local tax authority. I would like to point out that that section, as written, preserves taxing authority over VOIP, but not IP-enabled services, which obviously leaves open the door that local government could no longer tax IP-enabled services. And as Mr. Christ of Mack just pointed out, that jeopardizes franchise fees from cable services, among other things. The amendments do discuss preservation of local authority to require cable franchises, but that provision references franchises under Section 621 of the Cable Act, and I would like to note that Section 622 addresses cable franchise fees. So again, if you go back to the very limited tax authority for local government in the bill, cable franchise fees are still at risk. So we've mentioned, I think, adequately at this point, the unintended consequences, and certainly franchise fees of all kinds and local right-of-way authority is at risk. I'll just mention, as I think all of you know, franchises have been in play in Oregon for over 100 years. It's what the local governments use to regulate the right-of-way and to ensure that the companies that use the right-of-way do so safely and properly repair the streets when they're done. It's an essential authority that local government has had and needs to continue to have, as I think most members of the committee recognize. The other thing that's been addressed only briefly is the broad scope of the bill. Again, as Mr. Chris from MAC pointed out, this includes not just VOIP but IP-enabled service, and most of Verizon and other proponents' comments focused on VOIP. I think Representative Barton raised some important questions about what is the scope of IP-enabled services. What does this include? It does include services that may not be invented yet, and I think it's, again, that exacerbates the risk to local government and local authority, but also in terms of the consumer protection side, you're talking about deregulating a bunch of services that don't exist. You don't know what they are. You're not sure what you're deregulating. From the consumer point of view, even for VOIP, when they pick up their phone, they're picking up their phone. They don't know. They don't differentiate in many cases. Skype is probably a different type of service, but other VOIP services, the fixed VOIP service, they don't realize that when they're picking up their phone and they have a VOIP service, that their consumer protections are at risk, that they don't have the same recourse that other phone consumers would have. So I think that's a significant issue with this bill. Finally, there's been, again, discussion about the status quo. I believe that the Verizon's attorney adequately represented the fact that the FCC has ruled on nomadic VOIP service, but has not ruled definitively on fixed VOIP service. So I think, again, to Representative Barton's question from very early on, this would seem to me to be a preemption of state authority over these services without adequate opportunity to deliberate on whether or not that would be appropriate. The last thing I will mention is when the FCC did rule that states could not regulate the nomadic VOIP service, they have since then, in my view, backed away from that by realizing that 911 needs to be covered. Universal Service Fund contributions need to be covered. CALEA, the Communication Assistance for Law Enforcement Act, which enables wiretapping, these need to be covered. I think that the FCC didn't realize the unintended consequences when they ruled on the nomadic VOIP, and I think we're looking at the same thing here of potentially deregulating services without realizing what type of regulation might be necessary or appropriate in the future. And thank you again for the opportunity. I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Before you go, ma'am, Representative Esquil has to go. So go ahead, Representative.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to relay to everyone here that myself and the chair came off of a local government, that we were tied up in litigation for quite some time, and I do not want to go back there. So make sure, and I'm looking at the people that are doing this, make sure that this does not come to that point, because if it does come to the point where it opens that door, I will not ever support this bill.
Thank you, Representative. Ms. Go ahead, and then Representative Kinnear.
Chair Schaffler, I apologize. Vice Chair Barton and Vice Chair Cameron, my name is Brenda Wilson. I'm the Governmental Relations Manager for the City of Eugene, and I apologize. I've been trying to ignore this, but it's not paying any attention to me. But I want to pick up on what Representative Esquivel said. We do not want this to go to litigation. The City of Eugene has been in the very unique position to have fought four of these cases at a cost of over $2 million to the City of Eugene, and we have prevailed in every single one of them. When House Bill 2405 first came out, we were very concerned about it because it wasn't clear. We weren't clear what regulation meant. And absolutely, Representative Kinnear, we need to know what the certainty of this bill is. And we believe that even with the amendments, it has unintended consequences, as Representative Barton pointed out. And what I mean by that is the term regulation is very concerning to us. We weren't sure when we saw the first bill whether or not it would impact our ability to collect franchise fees and to manage our rights of way. And when we saw the amendments, it made me even more concerned. But we're very troubled by this, and I'll tell you why. Because right now we are in pending litigation with Verizon. They have refused to pay our just compensation under our city ordinance since October of 2006. And what is their argument? Their argument is that our ordinance is a barrier to entry. And as you've seen in the amendments, that is something that is prohibited. So we do not have certainty under this bill. It is very far-reaching, and it will lead to additional regulation and litigation. Excuse me, additional litigation, which right now the City of Eugene doesn't have $500,000 to throw at this, but we find that our ability to regulate our rights of way and our ability to collect our lawful compensation for the use of our rights of way is important to us and our citizens, and that's why we are doing this. And Representative Witt mentioned, are there other companies who would be interested? Absolutely. And using that grocery analogy that was mentioned before, if Verizon is the pink shirt and they don't have to pay, then other companies will feel that they don't have to pay as well. That is unlawful under the Federal Telecommunications Act. But again, that will lead to more litigation, and we just don't have the funding to fight these over and over and over again, even though we have won every single one of them. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have. And again, I apologize.
That's great. We don't need to apologize. Any questions of these nice people?
Mr. Chairman.
Forgive me, Mr. Representative Kinnear. I have you down on the list.
I guess it's more of a comment. I guess earlier Verizon indicated a willingness to work with parties about this, and I guess
yes.
I would hope as chair you might give some instructions.
And I think they're getting their marching orders as we speak. And I may have misread the bill, but maybe I misunderstand earlier testimony. But currently, we aren't regulating any of this, so technically we wouldn't be deregulating anything. And if we know, and I don't, the statement there may be unintended consequences does not mean there are going to be, because if we knew there were going to be unintended consequences, well, then we know there's going to be consequences. So yeah, just the language, it makes a difference here. It really is important. But that being said, I agree. We don't want this to end up in a bunch of litigation. That would be horrible. And to be quite frank with you, it'd be horrible and against the best interest, horrible for and against the best interest of the industry and those who invest in it if it does go to litigation and they fail, as you said they have been. So they have a little interest in not going to court as well. But certainly this committee and this chair definitely support and want to maintain and shore up local government's ability to charge those franchise fees, which we want to give that control their right-of-way and not take away any existing taxation. I think that is very important. And I think we've already said, even though this part of the industry is currently deregulated, certainly everyone in this committee, I believe, wants the consumer to be able to have some place to go get recourse if they're being ripped off. And not even if they're just unhappy. Then apparently they can go with some other provider. But we definitely want people to have some recourse if they're being stolen from, misled, victims of fraud, all those good things that my counsel here can explain a lot better than I can. Any further questions of this panel? Representative Matthews.
So, Mr. Chair, just point of clarification, and anybody on the panel, perhaps, you know, when a statement's made about four litigated cases, $2 million, knowing what that must mean to a general fund impact and inability to raise revenue, police, fire services, and everything. Can we get evidence of those? Could you provide some case documentation to your ability to us to, as a panel so we can see that? Would that, is that possible?
Chair Schaffler, Representative Matthews, absolutely. As I stated, we are currently in pending litigation with Verizon because they have not paid us since October of 2006. So the information from that case will be limited since it is ongoing litigation. But from the four previous ones, AT&T, Comcast, Sprint, and Quest, absolutely, we'll provide that information to the committee.
Okay. And follow up, Mr.
Yes,
Chair,
sir.
Briefly. And so it's my understanding the amendments as proposed as you read them does nothing to allow franchise fees and limits ability again. Is that correct assumption?
Chair Schaffler, Representative Matthews, yes. The way I read the amendments, it does not expressly preserve local right-of-way management and franchise authority, which has been the source of litigation, again, over whether or not there needs to be an explicit preservation of that authority or if there it's enough to just not mention it. I would rather, and I, from my, the comments I'm hearing, no one would like to be litigating that question.
Yeah.
It needs to be clearly
Thanks,
stated.
Mr. Chair. My pleasure. I'm going to have to go move on, but we're going to have a public hearing on the amended version, and as the good chair said, it may be a bigger, more expansive version, and I look forward to having you all come back. I hope you're feeling better.
Thank you.
Make sure, Andrea, you tell your bosses how sympathetic and understanding and protective I was of the good League of Oregon Cities. I would like to call Mr.
Once
John.
In a while, it's a good thing. Yeah,
absolutely. You. We're on it together. We want to just make sure that John DiLorenzo and Jeff Oxley, please. Go ahead, whenever you guys are ready.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John DiLorenzo. I'm a partner at the law firm of Davis Wright Tremaine, and I am here on behalf of my clients, Integra Telecom, TW Telecom, which is the old Time Warner, XO Communications, Paytech, and McLeod USA Telecommunications. We are all in opposition to House Bill 2405. My clients are facilities-based competitive providers of local telephone service. Those in our industry are known as competitive local exchange carriers, or CLECs. Collectively, we have constructed thousands of miles of network plan in Oregon. We serve well over 50,000 customers throughout the state. In order to offer our competitive services to customers, including small, medium, and large businesses, we are, in some respects, beholden to the incumbent telecommunications providers like Verizon and Quest, who historically have had infrastructure in the ground. The CLECs are permitted to lease this infrastructure in order to compete, and this is by virtue of federal law and provisions of our state telecommunications statutes. House Bill 2405, as printed, will, in our view, deprive the Public Utility Commission of necessary regulatory jurisdiction needed to preserve our delicate balance that allows us to compete with the incumbent providers. With me today is Mr. Jeff Oxley, who is General Counsel for Integra Telecom, and he'll explain why. His testimony does reflect the position of Integra as well as TW Telecom, XO Communications, Paytech, and Cloud. I'd also like to state that we are responsible for the Dash 6 amendments that you have before you. These would assuage our concerns and cover the instances that we are worried about. We have reviewed the draft amendments that Verizon has supplied.
They give us some protections, but don't go quite far enough. For instance, they do cover our long-distance concerns, but not our local exchange concerns. They also deprive us of the protections in Chapter 759 with respect to certain practices that are prohibited, and we would like to avail ourselves of those protections, too. However, we are conversing quite regularly with Mr. Green, and Mr. Romano, and Mr. Eng, and I want to assure the Chair that we will do our very best to try to get to yes if we can on these issues.
And Mr. Oxley, we have this. It's a legal part of the record. I'm not going to allow you to read it verbatim, so summarize, please.
Yes, sir, I will. If I may just take 2 minutes, I'll use one to talk about what Integra does and the other one to talk about our concerns that have not been fully addressed yet.
I very briefly about what you do and then the concerns about the bill. Very briefly, though.
We provide...
And identify yourself, please.
My name is Jeff Oxley. I'm the General Counsel for Integra Telecom. We're an Oregon corporation. We employ 2,200 people. The majority of those are in Oregon. Oregon is the biggest state that we serve. We serve small and medium business customers, and 95% of those customers we serve through a loop that we lease from Quest or Verizon. You've heard talk of the level playing field. My metaphor is more, I'm the mouse playing on the elephant's trampoline. I want the status quo, too, because I have a business right now. But I have it because the PUC can regulate the terms and conditions under which I get access to those vital facilities. With this bill, I'm worried that my status quo goes up in smoke. I have spent years now arbitrating interconnection agreements in Oregon. They work. They work for our business. The PUC oversees those. They arbitrate them. They enforce them. The mere presence of the PUC is helpful to companies like mine because they're somebody who can police the elephants. That's my concern with this bill, is it changes my world dramatically. It changes, potentially, our ability to do business in Oregon. We're growing. We're serving customers. It's true we're on a copper network, but that copper network is doing things 5 years ago it could never do. Technology isn't isolated to the fiber network. It's happening on the copper network, too. And why should I be disadvantaged or have my world changed because of a technology I use? We should be doing regulations that are technologically neutral. This isn't. Further, the FCC hasn't decided what regulatory treatment to give this, and I worry about the law of unintended consequences, too. I'm done. Thank you.
Oh, and believe me, sir, that was very well put. And I want you to keep your business, and I want you to stay in business, and I don't want any unintended consequences of any actions I take to put you out of business. I think that's pretty clear, too. And I know these nice folks are listening carefully to you and a long list of others. So, any questions of these gentlemen? Thank you. That was excellent testimony, by the way. We need to get a workshop on how to testify here.
You make a lot of money doing that, too.
Thank you, sir. I really do appreciate it, though, seriously. Jeff Boissonnette, Mary Beth Henry, and Sean McSpaden. And that's all I have on the list here, folks. We're doing great for time. I'm really grateful for that. Just go right ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair Schauffler, committee members. I'm Mary Beth Henry. I'm Deputy Director of the City of Portland's Office of Cable Communications and Franchise Management. I also serve as staff to the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission, an intergovernmental body made up of Fairview, Gresham, Wood Village, Troutdale, Portland, and Multnomah County. I have 3 points. Like Chair Beyer, I applaud Verizon's deployment of fiber-to-the-home technology. I only wish that I could subscribe to Fios, but as a citizen of Portland, it's not available to me. My second point is that proponents appear to be making the case that this legislation is needed to enable speedier network build-out and new service offerings. Verizon fails to note that the FCC issued a competitive franchising order in 2006, allowing telephone providers to install equipment in the right-of-way that can be used for any voice, video, or data service under existing authority. Nothing prevents Verizon from building out infrastructure in any Oregon community where it provides telephone service, other than getting right-of-way permits for excavation. Verizon is apparently now saying they should be exempted from obtaining local street use permits. My third point is I share other concerns about the impact on local franchise fees, consumer protection, and cable regulatory authority. Thank you.
Who wants to go first, guys?
Certainly. Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sean McSpaden. I serve as Oregon's Deputy State Chief Information Officer within the Department of Administrative Services. The purpose of our testimony today is to express specific concerns our department has with the bill as introduced. Certainly, we're encouraged by the amended language that's been discussed earlier this morning that preserves our ability to provide telecommunications services to state agencies, to set rates, to recover costs of providing those services. There are several Oregon revised statutes that direct us to coordinate, regulate, set rates, and recover costs for information technology and telecommunications services to state agencies. We also manage a voice network through contracted services with companies like Verizon, AT&T, et cetera, that serves approximately 40,000 state employees. We currently are converting much of that telecommunications infrastructure to voice over internet protocol and internet protocol-based services. As introduced, we believe House Bill 2405 prevents our department from fulfilling our statutory mandates and from providing and recovering costs for these more cost-effective and efficient telecommunications services to agencies. As mentioned earlier, we are working with advocates for the bill on amended language, and we look forward to seeing the amended bill and coming back and testifying at the subsequent hearings.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Look forward to it. Jeff, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. We represent residential ratepayers of utilities. I just want to say for the record, to start out, I am a Skype user. I think it's great. I get to see my niece and nephews at a whim. However, that's not a telecommunication service. What we're talking about, and to go directly to the chair's question earlier, what's wrong with legislating that we're keeping the status quo, and we've been hearing a lot about preserving the status quo. What we're really talking about from the consumer point of view is protecting the carrier of last resort that we heard a lot from Chairman Beyer about. The proponents of this bill say that consumers will always have a choice, but the bill actually doesn't say that, and that's the point. This bill goes beyond the status quo with its specifically saying any successor protocol. We don't know how this technology will be deployed, and that's almost an exact quote from one of the proponents up here, is that we have no idea how this technology is going to be used. We want to make sure that the carrier of last resort responsibilities, the folks that just want the dial tone, that don't care about Skype, that don't care about the packages, are protected, and that service remains regulated. We hear from the proponents that it's not their intention to ever deliver their tariff service over this platform, but if this platform is ever used to deliver that service should be regulated, and we'd like the bill to reflect that. We also acknowledge the consumer protection concerns that the PUC and others have put forth, and we'd like to see language about that as well. Thank you for your time.
There's definitely going to be more in different language. Any questions of these good folks? And we are going to have another public hearing on any amended version of this bill. So, and I don't mean to short anyone here at the end. I hope you understand. I know you do. I really appreciate your concern and your testimony, and I look forward to working with you in the future on this. All right. I'm just going to close the hearing because we have to go to the floor, and these good people got to go prepare themselves. But what's, like I just said, we're going to hear the amended version of this bill, and everyone will have an opportunity to come up and speak again on the merits or demerits of whatever comes forth. I appreciate everyone's time. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing and adjourn all at the same time.